James Natwee, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us here in Euronews, and congratulations for this award. A photographer, a photojournalist, or a war photographer, how do you define yourself?
I'm a photojournalist because if you need to have a label, I don't think labels are actually that important, but if you need a label, photojournalist, I'd say, is a very general one, because I'm a photographer who works for news publications. That's one way of defining it. A war photographer could be another label, if you need one. I think someone who shoots portraits might be called a portrait photographer. If someone photographs landscapes, they might be called a landscape photographer. If someone photographs wars, as I did in a very concentrated manner at one time, people called me a war photographer. I don't think it really is such a big deal, but it's a label that is useful, I suppose.
Okay. And why do you do this job, especially the war part? Do you know that the British photographer Don McCallum says that you can only be a war photographer in the long term if you have a purpose. Which is your purpose?
Yeah. Because people have to know what's going on in the world. And when there's a war, there's so much at stake for the people involved in the war and for the rest of the world. Photographs can get behind the political rhetoric that is always surrounding a war, that creates a kind of justification for the people who are conducting the war. And photographers are on the ground. They're seeing what's happening to individual human beings and showing the effect of the war, and they're holding accountable the decision makers and policy makers who are conducting the war. And this is a way in which public opinion can be brought to bear to pressure change. And I think this is the purpose of our job.
Okay.
And I think that what inspired me to become a photographer and continues to drive me now.
By the way, do you think that a picture can be an antidote to war? An antidote?
Yes, I think that in a way, a picture that shows the true face of war is an anti-war photograph. It would, in my experience and seeing what war does to people and societies, it would be very difficult to promote that. And so I think that photographs that show the true face of war, in a way, are mediating against using war as a means of conducting policy. I think there are things worth fighting for in this life. And I think the people have to defend themselves. But I think we should also be aware where war leads. What are the inevitable consequences of war in human terms? And we must never forget it. And we must think deeply upon it before ever committing people to fight a war. We must understand where it will lead them.
In fact, you have covered dozens of wars. Is there particularly one that has marked you more than the others?
It's quite difficult for me to put a hierarchy on such matters, because when someone is suffering, when someone has been victimized, it's hard to say one is more important than
sure.
the other. I think they're all
sure it is.
Equally important. Having said that, the genocide in Rwanda was something that was so extreme and so unusual. It was very hard to actually understand in my mind. I mean, I knew what happened. I witnessed the results of it. But how it could be that 800,000 to a million people were slaughtered by their countrymen in 3 months using farm implements as weapons. What there's a moment that comes when someone is raising a machete or an axe above the head of an innocent person. What allows them to bring that weapon down upon that their neighbor? I actually can't understand that.
Most of your work is done in black and white, but I mean, if your purpose is to portray reality, in fact, reality is not shaped in black and white; it's shaped in color. So why the black and white?
That's right. Black and white is not real, and it's abstract. But what it does do is that it distills the essence of what's actually happening. Because color itself is such a strong phenomenon in a physical sense that in a way it competes with what is happening in the picture, and it tries to become the subject of the picture. So to abstract it into black and white distills the essence of what's happening without competing with color. Although I will say there have been many great war pictures made in color,
of course,
in the past and
of course
and today.
In your opinion, what makes the difference between a good image and an iconic image? I mean, what are iconic images made of?
Yeah, it's a very subjective matter, but I'll attempt it. I think there has to be some very strong, genuine, deeply human emotion expressed in the picture. It has to be a situation which is historically significant. And, you know, the journalism 101, you have to be in the right place at the right time, which sounds kind of simple, but actually it's extremely difficult, as you know.
That's all, yeah.
So, I think it has to be the condition of public awareness of a certain event has to reach a certain point before a picture can become iconic. Mm-hmm. For example, the picture of the young boy Alan Kurdi.
That's essentially what I meant. Yeah.
Who was drowned off the coast of Turkey. Mm-hmm. It came at a moment when the world was aware enough of that situation. Mm-hmm. Where it galvanized public opinion. Mm-hmm. The picture of Nick Ut, of the young girl who was, you know, running from the napalm. Mm-hmm.
In Vietnam.
It happened in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. It happened at a time when there was, you know, enough awareness of the war and enough protest against the war that picture, again, galvanized public opinion.
Speaking about that, hard impact images and mass media. You know surely firsthand that publishers and editors are quite often reluctant to publish these kind of images. You mentioned the Island Kurdi example is a very good one. And the most used argument by publishers and editors is that by publishing these images, we are some kind undermining the dignity of the victims. Does it make any sense to you, this argument?
I think that if people suffer, does not mean they don't have dignity. If people are afraid, it does not mean they lack courage. If people are enduring difficult circumstances, it doesn't mean they don't have hope. I think that that pictures don't undermine dignity necessarily. I didn't think the picture of Alan Kurdi undermined his dignity. I think it caused a great deal of sympathy for the young boy and for his family and for all of the immigrants. And if it had been a picture that was not dignified in some way, that didn't recognize the sacrifice that had been made, then the picture wouldn't have had effect. I think it's largely an academic point of view.
Of course. As a matter of fact, it is. You have been an inspiration for several generations of photographers and journalists. If you would have to give some advice to somebody who wants to become a war photographer these days, what would you say, very briefly?
To someone who wants to become a war photographer?
Yeah, these days, right now.
I would tell them, don't do it.
And why?
Because I think that if they really have to do it, they're going to do it anyway. Doesn't matter what I say. And if they don't really want to do it, then they probably shouldn't be doing it. And maybe my advice would help them to avoid a situation.
Yeah. But I wasn't pointing to, on that direction. What I mean is...
Well, go ahead. I'll say more.
Yeah. No, for example, in 2001, you appeared in a documentary called The War Photographer, where you explained how you worked, the risks that you take when you are in the field. But this was 15 years ago. I mean, things have changed a lot. So now, which are the new dangers that war photographers right. have to take when they go right. on the ground? And the name of the country comes naturally to mind, is Syria, for example.
I would say that, you know, there are certain places that are probably not, people would not be advised to go there. And I think that, you know, young people coming up and they want to make a name for themselves, they want to go where no one else is going. I would say think very, very carefully before going to a place where it's almost certain you'll be kidnapped or abducted.
That's what I mean.
Because what good will that do? You're not going to get any work done at that point. You're going to end up becoming a victim and you're going to be used by the people who have abducted you either to make money or to make an example out of you. So I would just advise young people to be not reckless, but to be very careful about the choices they make. Once they make them, they have to throw themselves into it with all their energy, but to be aware where they're going before they make that move.
To do what you do, you really have to go through very dramatic and sensitive situations. Like, for example, putting your camera in front of somebody who's going to get killed, or even portray the relatives or the families of somebody who just passed away.
Yes.
I mean, very really tough situations. How do you manage these kind of situations? Do you always ask for permission before you take a shot? How do you manage all this?
Well, in the case of grieving families, normally you could not be in that situation unless they wanted you to be there. In so-called normal life, it would be unthinkable to do that. But in the extreme conditions of war, where people are being victimized, where they're silenced and rendered invisible by the powers that be, they want their story to be told. So when someone comes along who's willing to share the same risks that they're in, is interested in them, and wants to tell their story, they become a kind of messenger, and people welcome you and they want you to be there. So when it's possible, I introduce myself, I express my condolences, I tell people who I am, who I'm working for, what are my intentions, and I ask their permission. And without their permission, I couldn't be there. Once they give the permission, they don't even notice I'm there. Because they conduct themselves as they would, and they express their grief freely as they would.
And that's the most difficult part.
I mean,
to be there and not be there.
Yes. And even when I have the permission and when I've been accepted, it's still difficult for me to do it. Even though I know it's okay. It's just personally I have to overcome my own personal emotional obstacles to do it. But those obstacles must be overcome, just like the physical obstacles and the obstacles of danger must be overcome to do your job.
And to finish, have you ever covered a US election campaign?
No.
Never?
No.
Would you have liked to cover this one?
No. Political campaigns are kind of outside my area of interest as a photographer. What I want to do is not photograph so much the politicians, is to photograph where their decisions and where their policies are being carried out on the ground and to question them and hold them accountable, not actually to photograph them.
Well, James Natwe, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and take care.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.